because I think if it's the leadership pushing the message down, that's the wrong way about it. So when we set about our blueprint, we ask our people what they think, and then they become the drivers of the document. Then they are making the suggestions, and then we're saying, so I think I've always been a great believer that if you love your people, they will love your customers, and that's how you build a business you can be proud of.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 56 of the show. In this episode, we are joined by David Pollock, who is the executive chairman at Chess, a company he founded in 1993 that is named after his two eldest children, Charlie and Jesse. Chess was number one in the Sunday Times 100 Best Companies to Work For list in 2018 and has been high up in the top 100 rankings for the last 12 years. David has also been awarded the Best Leader by the Sunday Times 100 Best Companies to Work For in 2017 and 2018, and won the Innovation in Business Award for his unique happiness training in 2016, along with many other national and regional awards. Today, Chess employs over 300 people throughout the UK, serving 27,000 business customers in the information communications technology sector, and has completed over 100 acquisitions. I was absolutely fascinated by the level of focus that David and his leadership team consistently put upon the people, the culture, and their well-being. And at the very same time, they expect incredibly high standards of performance from everyone in the organisation and hold people firmly accountable to those standards. Outside of work, David is an active supporter of the Prince's Trust and has been chairman of the North West Development Committee since 2010. He's a vice president of East Cheshire Hospice and was a trustee of Active Cheshire, a charity that encourages health and well-being, from 2012 to 2017. Before we get into this episode, please just let me pause for a few moments to mention the CEO Sleep Out, which is a charity that I'm very proudly supporting right now. CEO Sleep Out UK is a national movement and a registered charity that aims to unite business leaders, those with influence and power to do things differently, behind a call to end homelessness. They hold CEO Sleep Out events in cities all across the UK, and in doing so are striving to unlock understanding, empathy, and raise big money, the majority of which is ploughed back to charities working tirelessly on the front line of homelessness in each host city. So far, more than 3,800 executives have raised £2.9 million, providing 100 charities with the funds to change countless lives. If you want to get involved, there are a number of ways to do so. Listen to episode 55 and my conversation with their CEO, Bianca Robinson. You can visit their website via the link in the show notes. You can sign up and join a Sleep Out yourself and raise money via the same link. Or you can sponsor me and my Sleep Out at Lourdes on the 22nd of November 2021, for which I'm match funding every single penny donated. And again, you can find that link in the show notes too. On behalf of all of the UK's rough sleepers, let me say thank you in advance for your support with this. And now, without any further delay, please enjoy my incredible conversation with an award-winning leader, David Pollock. David, a very warm welcome to the podcast. First of all, how are you?
I'm good, yeah, great. You know, the sun's shining, life's all right, can't complain.
Cool. And whereabouts are we talking to you from?
I'm currently in Devon at the moment. So, yeah, I've been doing a couple of days of pleasure down here, swimming in the sea, all that sort of stuff.
Very good. Very, very good.
They say cold water, you know, it's good for the Alzheimer's. So not that I've got it yet, but like, you know, you never know.
Well, the cold water thing is interesting. I'm all up for trying anything that might improve my productivity or health. But I must say, one of the things I can't bring myself to do is a lot of the Wim Hof stuff and the cold showers and cold plunges. Like, I like my hot showers. That's one thing I'm not really prepared to try, but good on you.
Yeah, you need a bit of exercise. Good for your brain, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. David, let's dive straight in and ask the new opening question for the podcast, which is really, what does leadership mean to you?
Your job as a leader is to be decisive. Yeah, you need to make decisions ultimately. We have a document we use in our business called our sort of Blueprint for Success, and it talks about inspiring, guiding, motivating, and focusing your people. So I think as a leader, fundamentally, you've got to make decisions. Crack on and take responsibility. If you cock it up, you cock it up. But at least somebody has to go, right, we're going down that road. And you're allowed to change your mind, but that's, again, is another decision. So being decisive, inspiring your people, guiding them, focusing and ultimately motivating them.
Sounds like a pretty good list and definition to me. And David, I know from looking at your bio, you've kind of led, run a number of businesses in your career. How would you say that career journey you've been on has shaped you as a leader? And what are maybe some of the lessons you've learned along the way that have really sort of stood out for you?
Fun, it goes back to positivity, you know, leadership. You know, nobody wants a miserable leader, do they? I mean, you know, who would want to work with somebody who's miserable or negative or gloomy? Or, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, you know, if your car's broken down or the, you know, the cat's been run over, you know, you can't stroll in the office and start crying in front of your people. It doesn't work. And I remember our lot when we had the crash, what was it, 2009, and I remember coming in and doing a sort of rallying cry for troops thing, you know, in adversity, there's opportunity. So our job is to find the opportunity here, you know, and particularly we're in the tech space and, you know, businesses need to save money or do whatever. And a bit like COVID, same thing, you know, when it hit, everybody needed what we did. So it was like, right, guys, how can we help our customers? So there's always opportunity in adversity. So I think it's, you know, looking for the angle. Where's the angle? You know? So I think that's maybe where I've come from. There's always something there to go at. Your problem actually is starting too many things. What you've actually got to do is distill down, because there's money and success to be had in everything. But actually, which one do you want to focus on? Really become a master, a leader, be great at something. You know, you don't want to be mediocre at everything.
And David, you spoke there about being optimistic and finding the opportunity in the challenge, or finding the opportunity in the disaster. Is that something that's inherently you, or is that something you've had to learn and develop as a skill to take that approach as a leader? Like, where does that come from?
I don't know. Maybe it's inherent. I think in humans, we inherently have to solve problems every day. I just think maybe on a business scale, the problems are maybe slightly bigger. I think you've got to take time out. So going back to the story about, you know, swimming at the beginning, or I do a lot of biking, if I've got something to think about, I go on my bike, because you need to, I think your brain, how your brain works, it's a bit like a washing machine or a dishwasher, and it's best processing when you're being active, or, you know, the best thinking is done when you're out of the office. You know, they say, you know, behind a desk is a dangerous place to run a business, and wholeheartedly agree. You need to be out and about, because that's where you hear stuff from people, and therefore stuff guides you. I'm a sort of great believer the universe will deliver you messages, stories, or whatever it might be. The night before last, we're out at dinner with somebody who was telling me that their father had been killed by a bull. And then yesterday morning, we go for a walk, and literally there's gates open and there's bulls everywhere. And it's like, so I think sometimes the universe delivers you messages. You've got to kind of have your antenna up and listen, basically. Anyway, yeah. Needs to say, we got away from the bulls. We went down another road, there were more bulls there. So we decided to retreat. So anyway, there you go.
I wholeheartedly agree about the universe delivering the right message and the right opportunity at the right time. And I think as well, it's also, we see more of what we choose to focus on, right? And I wonder if, had you not had that conversation the previous night about the gentleman's father being killed by the bull, you might not have noticed the bull in the field. You might have seen the gate open. I don't know, but we absolutely see more of what we focus on. It's like when you buy a new car, right? You suddenly see the same car as you everywhere on the road because it's in your consciousness.
Yeah. You think everybody's got one.
So David, like, the big question I'd love to ask you is, like, what's the secret sauce for consistently being ranked in the top 100 of the Times best companies to work for? Because that's some achievement. I mean, you've been in the top 100 10 years in a row, is it? Something like that?
It's now 12 years in a row. Yeah. And we spent four of them in the top three. We were second twice, which is really annoying. And we finally got the number one spot in 2018. So
how do you do it? How do you do that? What's the secret?
I think you come back to this, the blueprint for success document, which, you know, people can, you know, anybody listening to this can go to our website and download and read. It sort of articulates who we are and what we do. I suppose it comes back to sort of, you know, a philosophy of what you're going to be remembered for. You're not going to be remembered for how much money you've made. You'll be remembered for how well you took care of your people. So I think I've always been a great believer that if you love your people, they will love your customers, and that's how you build a business you can be proud of. And that's really always been our goal. And it doesn't necessarily mean being soft. I mean, you know, if you've got somebody who's a nag, you know, like I say to my, I love radiators, I hate drains. You know, so if you've got somebody who's negative and bringing the team down, also if you've got somebody who's lazy and useless, you need to, as leaders, you need to fire them and get rid of them. So you know, it's making sure that you keep the good people and you help the less good people to try and become great. But if they're not going to make the transition themselves, you see the back of them. So I think it's culture. We're big on culture. There's a whole page about what our cultural beliefs are, particularly around giving something back. We do a lot with charity. I think it's really important if you're lucky enough to have a job or lucky enough to be in a successful arena, then you need to pass that good fortune, that good karma on to others. And therefore, I'm a big fan of encouraging our people to jump out of planes, do 10K runs, charity bakes, you know, dress down days, you know, anything that raises a bit of money for charities. I mean, we have this app that we use, which we'll talk about in our one-to-ones, which we our people can praise each other for good performance. And when you praise, the person who receives the praise can actually nominate to give a pound to charity. And we do, thousands of praises every, I think it's about 2,000 or 3,000 every month. And that allocates cash to charity. And therefore, I think when you're helping others, less fortunate yourself, it makes you feel good about yourself, and therefore you perform at a different level. So I think that sort of balance of culture and playing a part in the wider community has been a key to that success.
Yeah, and you mentioned happiness there, which is really interesting for a number of reasons. I think there's so much research been done around the benefits and productivity gains that come from happiness. There's, like, a lot of stuff came out of Harvard, and was fortunate enough to have Professor Sonia Lubomirsky on the show a few episodes back, who wrote the book The How of Happiness. And I saw again on your bio on LinkedIn, I think, that you mentioned some happiness training that you ran in the business that I think you won some sort of innovation award for. Can you tell us a little bit about that, seeing as you mentioned happiness?
Yeah, sure. So I think, again, going back to the charity thing, I got involved with the Prince's Trust back in 2007, 2008-ish, something like that, and helping them raise money and that sort of thing. And then they asked me if I'd go and talk to the young people. They basically look after, or they help the most disadvantaged people in our society, about 60,000 young people a year. And they asked me if I'd go and talk at some of their team programs. And I did a talk actually 2 days ago with their enterprise teams. And I sort of put together this, I suppose, my top 20 life skills, tips, things I've learned about how to manage your brain to make sure that you, again, going back to see the positivity in everything, see the lesson in everything. So that sort of evolved, and I was doing it for the young people, and a lot of the office said, "Oh, it's all well and good, you're helping these people for the charity. What about us?" So I started doing happiness training at work, and I run a few sessions a year and a few sessions for charity, and, you know, businesses that feel that they need a bit of, you know, oomph. Yeah, it's really about mind management. You know, your mind can be your greatest asset and it can be your worst enemy. And it's about learning how to train your mind to encourage you to be positive, see the happiness in every day, see the light in every, because there is it, you know, sure, there's plenty of miserable stuff. I mean, all you have to do is listen to BBC. That'll put you off. But ultimately, it's looking for the light in life and looking for the happiness. So that's kind of what I do.
And those sort of 20-odd tips, are they ranked in importance order, or some more significant than the other? If I said to you, what are like two or three of those top tips and lessons you've learned throughout your life, like what would you say?
Well, I always start with open your mind. That's the first one, is be open to new ideas. I think we've all become very closed and closeted in our life, you know. Oh, I don't like Brussels sprouts, I don't like, you know, I don't like Man City, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know. So we become closed, and I think you've got to be open to knowledge and wisdom throughout your life, and that keeps you fresh, which I think is, again, is quite good mentally. A lot about smiling, you know, smile, the world smiles with you. Talking to yourself, yes, give yourself a kick at the backside if you haven't done your sit-ups or your press-ups this morning and haven't done your run. But actually, ultimately, be an encourager to yourself in your chat, you know, see things in your mind eye. Again, positive visualization. I went on a sports psychology course one time. It was all about, you know, you think of all the football players, they positively visualize the future. So it's just the same in business. So imagine winning the deal, imagine winning the award. So, you know, you have to plan for these things and put the effort in. You don't get the Sunday Times, you don't become best company to work for unless you've got a plan.
Yeah.
And so you start slowly working towards it. So it's all that sort of stuff. And, you know, saying thank you, being kind. But yeah. So I thought about writing a book, but we'll see.
Yeah, you should do.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you mentioned having a plan there, because that takes me back to another question I wanted to ask. You was talking about the blueprint you have that's enabled you to consistently be in the Times top 100. The thing I wanted to ask there was, like, so many organizations, like hundreds of thousands of organizations around the world, have plans and blueprints and written values and philosophies and purposes, and they don't get anywhere near the Times top 100. So what is it that has made the difference for you, do you think, in terms of turning that plan into action and making it real and tangible? Because I think that's often the missing bit, right?
I think the key one is engagement, is engaging with your people. Because I think if it's the leadership pushing the message down, that's the wrong way about it. So when we set about our blueprint, we ask our people what they think. And then they become the drivers of the document. And then whenever if we're editing it and we're tweaking some of the value statements, then they are making the suggestions. And then we're saying, you know, so we survey our people every quarter to get their feedback on how we're doing against our plan, how we're doing against, well, you know, like our COVID plan, how they we do stand-ups at the beginning of every month, so every on midday on the first Monday of every month. There's about a 20-minute update when all our senior team gives you a couple of minutes on how their unit is doing. And then overall, we have a plan as to what the plan for the month is. But so we're surveying all the time, getting their views and their opinion. So it becomes their blueprint. It's not my blueprint. I might articulate it, but it's their blueprint. This is their idea. We're following their strategy. So I think being inclusive, and the old power of the crowd, the power, you know, if you ask 400 people what they think, you generally will get the right answers, and because every, you know, and much better that than me go, oh, right, we're going down there. Admittedly, I have to choose which of the routes we do, but you choose it in consultation with your team, with your people. So, you know, bringing people on the journey, you know, we do... Every new starter, I do a new starter intro and make it really clear to them that, you know, we're not a soft place to work. You know, if you're useless, bugger off, go and work somewhere else. You know, I'm not, you know, just because we're the best company to work for doesn't mean we accept piss poor performance. You know, we want people, we're a performance culture. We're here to win because we're here to build a business we can be proud of. We're also here to take care of 400 people's families, their kids, their mums, their aunts, their dogs. So we have to make the tough decisions sometimes to ensure that we pay everybody's wages.
I love that last piece that you shared, which just resonates 100% with I guess, my core view about leadership. It's the people we lead. We don't just impact them, right? We impact their husbands, wives, partners, sons, daughters, pets as well. Like our impact goes a long way as leaders.
Yeah. So be, you know, be up for it. So we do a lot of video stuff, you know, so we do the video at the beginning of the month. I do a mid-month video that gives you state of the nations, my view on stuff. And, you know, because people have chosen to be led by you. So they want to hear from you. They want to hear what your views are. And they want to, you know, yeah, and they want to hear your views on other things. They don't want to hear about, oh, you know, have we sold enough baked beans this month or whatever. It's, you know, what do you think about what's going on with COVID? So particularly with you know, when that hit, we were doing updates every week, and we were doing a Q&A session where people could come on live on, you know, Zoom or Teams we use, and ask us any question they want, you know, just so we can say, this is kind of what we think we're doing and this is where we're going. So I think communication is critical to effective leadership.
Mm. And David, seeing as you've mentioned COVID a few times and you clearly place such an emphasis on culture, I wonder, are there any new practices that you've brought in as a result of COVID that you think will stay? And are there any pre-COVID practices that used to exist in the business that you think going forward will no longer exist? The reason I ask is an exercise I've done, I've taken a few clients through it, where you sort of do a classic four-box grid, right? You can't be a consultant who's worth anything if you can't knock up a quick four-box grid. But if you think about sort of pre-COVID and post-COVID and sort of keep and bin, it's really interesting, I think, because there are certain bits about pre-COVID working that we want to get back to, other bits we probably don't. There have been some new ways of working forced upon us that we probably want to keep, and there's probably been some that we don't. So just kind of wonder what's cropped up kind of in that realm for you.
Well, again, coming back to ask the people. So we kept on asking the people as to whether they want to come back to the office, how they wanted it to work, blah, 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 blah. You know, and the reality is we've only got 4% of our people actually want to come back to the office full time. And then it's something like 78% want to do less than 5 days, want to either zero or less than 5 days a month. So we're of the belief that there's been a massive quality of life leap for our people in that they're not commuting anymore. We're trying to be super, super flexible. That's our strategy. Is, you know, you want to work at 7 a.m. or you want to work at 7 at night, fine. If you've got to do certain roles, let's say customer facing, then yes, you will work in those parameters. But broadly, try and be the new super flex business. And so that we've got hubs. We've now closed a lot of our bigger offices, and we're going to have hubs that will be open certain days of the month. People can go in for team meetings or knowledge sessions or one-to-ones. We're encouraging our leaders that we historically do one-to-ones every month. Our view is that people have to do a face-to-face one. We think twice a year is all we're asking for. Because you can do it on this. I find that we had a senior away day we did back in April where we all got together, and you'd have thought it would have been felt different because suddenly we haven't been together for, you know, I don't know, yeah, 15 months or something. But actually, we were all just as engaged, just the same as we would normally be, because we've been so used to seeing each other on Teams, that actually didn't really materially change. You know, admittedly, we all sat there drinking some booze late at night and talking to rubbish, but which you maybe don't do on Zoom, Teams. But no, so I think we are committed to being home first. We've agreed with our people that's what they want, so that's our new strategy. And we're just going through the articulation of what that looks like and what are their requirements that, yes, you do need to come in from time to time. And if you want to come in a lot, you can come in a lot. So, but at the moment, when we are literally less than 4% of people actually in the premises at any one time, it's like a ghost town. It's quite bizarre. So those are the things I think that we are, I think it's great, actually. I think people will, I think their quality of life is going to significantly improve. You know, be able to, you know, take your kids to school, pick them up, no issues with that. Be able to go to the gym when you want, go for a bike ride when you want, but still do your job. So the key one is, again, I suppose, is how we're going to measure performance. And then there's the trust thing, the whole trust thing that's got to change. You have to trust people. And there's still, there'll always be the person who takes the mickey. And you all know who they are. You know, if you ever ask our leaders, they go, right, okay, you know, you've got to lose one person in your team. Who is it? And they always go, oh, no, it's Johnny. And you go, well, what are you doing about it? Are you, you know, you're going to help him, or you're going to get rid of him. What are you going to do? So, yeah. so let's a bit like the Romans, you know, they used to have 1 in 10 when a battle was after a battle, wasn't it? So,
well, it was the Jack Welch philosophy at GE as well, I think, kind of regularly would sort of chop the, I mean, the bottom 20%, I think, yeah. is what he used to yeah. do from reading the book.
Yeah, well, we're not dissimilar. So going back to best company to work for and still chopping the bottom, because everybody in the team knows who the person who's dragging, lagging, not helping, being a pain in the backside, all that sort of stuff. They know who it is. And you say, well, you know, you're a leader, grasp the nettle. Either change their performance or see the back of them.
And, yeah, because I think if you don't, the danger is, right, as you said, everybody else can see the people who aren't performing or can see that the leader's not tackling some underperformance. And that becomes massively demotivating for everybody else, right? And before you know it, performance starts to drop to the lowest standard.
But that's the old bad apple, isn't it? A bad apple in a barrel. That's what it yeah. does. It rots the barrel. So it's the same simple philosophy. It is, you know, you've got to deal with it to save, and that's your ultimate responsibility. You know, it's not about all being mean to Johnny. It's no, you're being good to everybody else. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a lovely reframe. I love that. And David, I've heard you talk a lot about going to the people in the organisation and getting their view and their input. Has there ever been a situation where you've had a groundswell of opinion from the people within the business saying, this is what we want, but when you as the leadership, you or the leadership team really think like, that's not the right thing to do. We can't do that. We won't do that. And if so, how did you manage and communicate that?
Can't think of one off the top of my head. Yeah, now if I could, I don't tend to remember the bad stuff. I tend to, those stuff always gets deleted in my brain. And I always look at the good. No, I genuinely can't think of anything like that. I think as I say, we survey a lot. So we hear every quarter, we get the noise. Yeah, and because we do the one-to-ones every month, you get the noise out of the one-to-ones. And we, with our one-to-ones, we measure, so people give us what their top 10 focus was for the previous month, how they've done. So they tell us the positives, the challenges, and a sort of a summary. And then we score everybody for their energy, their attitude, their performance, their knowledge, and they score the leader. And everything's scored out of 5. So clearly one, I mean, you can see this, one is clearly poor, right? Two is equally poor, 3 is average, 4 is good, 5 is great. So we have the gimme 5 of the high 5 as opposed to the single finger of one. So it's a simple method, but what that gives you is it gives you numeric metrics for energy across the business, across individual teams, attitude in a business, and they're scoring the leader. And you begin to see trends of where maybe a leader is not taking his people with them, or people's attitudes dropping, or there's a feeling their performance is dropping, and therefore you can dive in and say, look, we've got a problem in the billing team, or we've got a problem in the, you know, whichever team it might be, and we need to just have a look at that leader and what he's doing or not, or what she's doing, and take a view. So metrics, I like to look at my metrics, but no, I don't think we've had any riots recently in our place.
Good to hear. And yeah. You mentioned kind of leaders and leaders of functions and departments there. How do you grow, develop, nurture future leaders within the business? What does that look like?
There's a leadership program. We've got a very structured leadership program. That takes them through. We have leader update meetings, Q&As, but same sort of thing like this where you know, we'll talk about it. Growing leaders is always a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, there's always that challenge, isn't it, where you promote somebody who's, they're really good at what they do, and they just promote them into leadership, and they're absolutely train crasher as a leader. And again, comes back to the old, you know, grasp the nettle. If they are a train crasher, you go, you know what, you know, Johnny, I'm awfully sorry, you're not cut out for a leader, you're much better at what you do, why don't we just you know, stick your back in that, I think.
Feel a little bit sorry for Johnny. He's really not doing very well, is he?
Yeah. Sorry, it's Molly or Johnny, one of the two.
And David, probably just two quick fire questions to finish up, if we may. What would you say are the one, maybe two books that you've read that have really had the biggest impact upon you?
Well, I think you're getting pretty warm on this one. So it's good one thing about it. It's a book called The Tibetan Book of the Living and the Dying.
Wow.
Actually, which is my sister sadly died of cancer back in 2003. And sort of, I suppose, to get my head around it, I read that book. It took me about 18 months, read a page a day and just sort of, you know, digested it. But it's very much about, I suppose, a philosophy of reincarnation, of karma and all that sort of stuff. And so I think it's, I think it steadies your soul, so to speak. And therefore, I think it's quite good to be coming back to the whole point about, you know, leadership's not about always about the money you make. It's about how you've cared for your people. So I think spiritually, I think caring and taking a longer view, I think, is important. So it was that one. And then the other couple I thought was good was the Clive Woodward book, Something Winning, I think it was called, back in 2003 when England won the Rugby World Cup. And again, how he took his team through that, and they had the team agreed the rules, the team agreed the... So coming back to the let the team make the decisions, that it's them. It's not him telling them we will arrive early for meetings. It's not telling them we will do this. It's them agreeing that's how we behave. So I think he had the right behavioural approach. So that one was, I thought was particularly good. But I read a lot. You know, I mean, well, yeah, I'm dyslexic, so I'm a pretty slow reader. But I think consuming knowledge as a leader is critical, whether it's through the media or other leaders, because there's always great ideas out there.
And did the Clive Woodward book, Winning, which is, that's probably my top book, actually. It's the only book I've read cover to cover multiple times. Did that influence a lot of your thinking when you were building Chess and defining the culture? Was that quite influential?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, actually, funny enough, Investors in People have a really good charter of how you should look after love your people. And one of the big ones is the old mushroom syndrome, keeping the darn feeling full of shit. And that's just, you know, you don't do that. And one of the things was about the stand-ups. And I think that we've been doing our stand-ups the first Monday of every month for, you know, 20-odd years. And it is probably one of the best things we do, because it's a beating heart of the business and keeps people informed. So I think, you know, keeping people informed is critical. And I think, yeah, so, you know, the Woodward book's a good one. Good to read.
Good. And final question, David. You probably partly answered this when I asked you the very first question, but what would you say are three key leadership traits, what are three key personality traits for leaders right now in the world we're all currently operating, living and leading in?
So I think I come back to your determination. You've got to be, you know, you've got to be a stubborn old sod. You've got to really just hang in there. You know, quitter never wins and winner never quits. So you just got to stick, hang in there, determination. I think positivity. You've got to be a shining light to people. They need people who are going to be positive and up there and really wanting it. So I think, you know, positivity, really, determination. And then the other one, I think, was listening, you know, listening and learning, because that's when, you know, it's like you guys, I think we came back to a bit like your instincts. You know, you hear that, oh, my dad got killed by a bull. Oh, gee, oh, there's a bull out. Oh, there's another bull out. Right, turn around. You know, so you kind of listen to the universe. Listen to the universe. It'll guide you all the way.
Brilliant. David, I've heard you speak a lot in the last 35 minutes or so about energy, positivity, being inspiring. And like that comes across in spades from you. I feel uplifted and energized as a result of our conversation. I'm sure everybody listening will feel the same. So thank you very much indeed for your time and sharing some of your experience and knowledge that you've gained from being in the Times Top 100 for 12 years in a row, I believe you said at the start. So thanks very much, and have a great day, whatever you're going on to next.
Good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Apologies for the quality of the sound. It's the broadband down here. Okay.
I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks, but most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.